Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. Good morning, everyone. This is the latest episode of the Human Technology Podcast. It may be a little unusual that I'm talking about the human brain and why the human brain is not a computer. My passion and my profession is the HMI, the human machine interface. So we have in the name already both parts, the human and the machine. And for me, it is very important to have a look at both sides, the human side and the machine side, the human and the technology. This podcast is called the Human Technology Podcast. And yeah, so we are in always on both sides with this one. And I love it. I love to have a look at both the technology, the, let's say, a little colder and sheer technology, and the human side. That is reflected also in my university time. I picked up studies in mechanical engineering. I started with that at the age of, I was a little younger than 20. And I hated it. I really hated all this engineering stuff, the mathematics, thermodynamics, mechanics, theory of construction. And, No. That was not at all my kind of thing. But since I had a lack in alternatives, I just kept on going and finished the first part of my studies, comparable today, maybe like a bachelor. And then I moved on and discovered human factors, ergonomics, usability, user experience. And that was the moment, when I realized why I had done all this to design the human-machine interface, the interface between humans and technology. And I picked up psychology, which was, for me, it was the perfect match to have both, to just learn both sides. How can I manipulate? How can I fine-tune? How can I design technology on one side? On the other side, how does the human brain work? How is human cognition working? How is human decision-making working? All this is part of psychology. For me, psychology was always the science of a healthy human, not of the human that needs treatment, psychological, psychoanalytical, whatever treatment. Now, I was in opposition to most of my fellow students. At that time, they were just like, hey, I need to know everything about psychology. I need to know everything about humans to help them, to move them forward when they're in a crisis, when they have depression, when there is conflict, and I need to do all good things, nothing against it, not at all. But that was not my approach to this. So for psychology was always for me just like, I need to learn everything, how the brain, how the human works and functions, and then I design technology accordingly to minimize the problems that occur in humans. And there was a big discussion, there was even a seminar called The Crisis of Psychology. And the discussion there was, do we as psychologists have the right to treat someone that is hurt by its environment, by its work, by whatever? We repair these people as psychologists and then send them back into exactly the situation. And my reply was, hey guys, this is not what I'm doing. I try to create an environment, a workplace, a car, an aircraft, a factory that is fitting the human needs, beliefs, dreams, abilities, to make it easier for these people to work there, and not to hurt them, and not to create the problems, not to create depression, not to create the psychological problems that we see in many places. And they just didn't understand it. They said, oh, no. You want to optimize working place. You want to squeeze everything about a human in a factory. And I said, no, not at all. It was exactly the opposite. I want to design the factory. I want to design every workplace in a way that it creates a better environment, a more humanized environment. And this is why I'm studying psychology. Anyway, all this is over. Today, even at my alma mater, the Technical University of Berlin, you can study that. You can have an engineering study, you can study psychology, and then you can add on a couple of classes to become a specialist in human-machine interfaces and usability, user experience. And with that, you are able to design technology in a way that it doesn't hurt, interfere, infringe, irritate humans. And so I learned gained an understanding about the strengths and weaknesses of the human brain, about all the balance in human technology interaction. So let's go down to the brain, to what the brain actually is. So the brain is the most complex structure we know in the entire universe. There may be others, but we don't know them. So all the complexity, or all the structures we know, have a certain complexity, and the human brain is the most complex one. We have about 1 billion neurons, cells, in our head, in our brain. Some say it's 80, some say 110 billion. So let's stick with the 100. That's a good figure for this one. And every single neuron has about 5,000 to 10,000 so-called synapses. They are the switches that are used to interact between the neurons. So neurons talk to each other. So they're not independent. They have interactions, and the switches that they use to steer these interactions are called synapses. And they have 5,000 to 10,000. We have 1 billion neurons with 5,000 to 10,000 synapses each. And this is the idea that we have the entire global population, but 12 to 15 times of that, 12 to 15 times the human population on a planet. And everyone has a smartphone with 5,000 to 10,000 contacts. This is roughly the, let's say, hardware side of the human brain. And everybody is communicating more or less with all of these contacts at the same time, sometimes a little delayed or sometimes not at the same time. But that's roughly the idea, just to give you an idea of how big this entire thing is and how complex the entire thing is. And we know a lot about the human brain. So where is what? Well, for example, over our ears, there is the hearing part, and the back of our head, there's the listening part. The most conscious part is, or idea of ourselves is created in the front part of the brain. So we roughly know this. And we also know how this information transfer between the neurons in these synapses works. And they're sending out chemicals, and then these chemicals are received on the other side, and then there is another group of chemicals that destroys these chemicals so that the transfer stops. this is roughly how it works. I mean, if there is a neurologist here in my listener group, they will kill me because I super oversimplify that. But for me, it's more about the basic principle that I would like to talk about. And most drugs and many medics work in exactly these synapses. So they manipulate the chemicals that are in working in these little switches. They either add something, they block something, they slow something, they speed up something. This is basically how drugs work. And a lot of the medics, let's say the positive drugs as well. This at the very end is a very mechanistic picture of the brain that we have. So we know from a technical side how it basically works. And this is like flying with an aircraft in 30,000 feet over Europe and identifying, okay, here's a border, there is a river, there's a sea, and there's London and there's Paris and there's Berlin. And so you can see that from above. But at the end, we don't know, we don't see single humans, and we don't see, and that is the major point, we don't see their intentions. We don't see what's driving there. Why are they doing this? So basically, I read the quote, the human brain, our understanding of the human brain is like flying over Europe and trying to understand the financial politics of the European Union, which just doesn't work. And because that is the case, there are different attempts, different metaphors that are used to explain the human brain. And usually the most advanced technology is used to explain the human brain. It was a steam engine sometime, it was a clock sometimes. And today, some of the most complex structures we know are computers. And this is somehow, or looks at least, somehow reasonable. The hard drive is the long-term memory, the working memory is the short-term memory, and so we can do parallels. The screen is what we do, what we act, the mouse and the keyboard is our eyes and our fingertips, and so we get the information in through that. So there seems to be some kind, or that seems to be somehow parallel. And the problem is, this is definitely not the case. We couldn't be more wrong on this. And I will talk about three different reasons why this is not the case. The first one is the way the brain works. And usually when I talk about this, either in my lectures or in my keynotes, I let all the people stand up and make a little meditation exercise. Since I don't know where you listen to this podcast, and maybe you are driving or maybe you are controlling a machine or whatever, so I won't do a meditation exercise here because that is definitely dangerous and not what we want. But if you do that, and the Buddhist meditation has the idea that you should stop the so-called monkey in your head. The monkey is your focus, and it is jumping around in a tree from branch to branch to branch. And the branches are your thoughts, and the monkey is focusing on this, and then on that, and here, and there. And this is what the people that meditate, which includes me, try to stop at least for a moment, for a short time. And if you do this for a couple of years, you can manage it for a couple of moments to stop this continuous chain of thoughts that you have. Basically, since we are born, from the first day until the day we stop breathing, we have a chain of thoughts, never ending. Yeah, and we sit here, and if you watch yourself thinking, maybe if you sit at a beach or with a nice mountain view, and then you can just sit there for a while, relax, and then you start watching your own thoughts, and you will find out that you have this continuous chain in your head. One thought triggers the next one. Every thought triggers a new one, and sometimes they're not anyhow related. But it's some kind of association that we create there. We have a strong emotional connotation in our brains. If I ask you, what have you had 3 weeks ago on Tuesday for lunch? You will probably not remember. If it was a very nice lunch, if it was the first lunch with your new spouse, or if it was an awful lunch that you had, then you will remember. But there is an emotional connotated to that. A computer knows this. Once you put data into a computer, it stays there, potentially forever, and it's static. It doesn't change. And there is no association. One data in a computer does not trigger another data. The idea that the computer, or no, it's the other way around. So we have the static situation on the hard drive, and as long as you don't destroy it, it stays there. We have with artificial intelligence a couple of changes coming up, but on a very low level. Now, basically, the computer is a data storage, and a human brain is triggering thoughts, change of thoughts. It has this associative behavior. Second point, the size of the data storage. You will know this when you get a new computer with a more or less empty hard drive. It works very well. And then you add a bit of data, a bit of software, and then you produce the first texts and tables and slides, and then you add a couple of pictures and maybe some music. Then you return from summer vacation and add some videos to this. And then there is the day when this hard drive becomes full. And the computer gets slower and slower and slower. And one day, when the hard drive is full, nothing works. For the human brain, there is no limit in capacity known. We don't know how big the human brain is, or if there is any limit at all. So nobody has a single idea where it could be, and if there is a limit in this one. Probably it is infinite. The capacity of a human brain seems to be unlimited. A friend of mine, we went together to high school. He is a genius in learning languages. And he himself says, he speaks some like 12, 15 different languages more or less fluently, including languages like Finnish, like Thai, like Chinese, Japanese, or Urdu. Languages that are meant to be, you cannot learn them. You have to learn them as a native language, or you will never learn them. He speaks them more or less fluently. And he says, the more languages I learn, the easier it gets for me to learn a new one. So it seems like his brain is not having, or this is the proof, his brain is not having any limits in this one. And he can store all the grammar and vocabulary of these different languages. And this shows another thing. When he says, the more languages I know, the easier it gets to learn a new one. The more you use your brain, the better it gets. So the brain is not a data storage like a hard drive. It's more like a muscle. If you train it, it gets better. If you don't use it, it gets worse. So a computer knows signs of usage. The brain knows only signs of non-usage. If you don't use it, it gets poorer. So a computer downgrades while use in software and hardware. The human brain upgrades when you use it, gets better and faster. And this is based on the third point. The human brain is constantly changing. It's constantly rewiring down to the point that it repairs itself. in certain limits. In German, we have a saying, what's Hansje nicht lernt, lernt Hans nimmer mehr, which means that what young Hans is not learning, will old Hans never ever learn. And this is totally wrong. This is proven wrong. This is based on the old picture we have of the brain. When you are born as a little baby, you have a brain that is more or less non-wired. So these 100 billion neurons have hardly any connections with each other. So they have the synapses, but they are not connected with the other neurons. And then we start learning, we start seeing the world, we get taught, we learn things from our parents, we learn things from our teachers at school, and then we build our brains. When you reach the mid-20s, everything is done. Your brain is fixed, it is there, it is not changing anymore, it's stable. When you get older, and the older you get, you will not learn anything new. And this is proven wrong. In the last 20, 25, 30 years, the idea came up, the brain remains dynamic. It constantly changes, independent from the age you're in. And whatever you learn, whatever you think, whatever you do, changes your brain, changes the structure of your brain. It's constantly adapting to new challenges. So I am, at the moment, rewiring your brain. Your brain will be, after this podcast episode, different than it had before. And this is the nice thing. And this remains until you're very old. And my dad is one of the best examples of that. He is very open. He's sucking in all kind of information. He's not watching any kind of entertaining TV. He's only watching educational TV. And he's reading high-value books. And he has a lot of knowledge. And man, when he got his smartphone 2 or 3 years ago, he worked himself in his late 80s. He worked himself into it, and now he's using this. Of course, some things don't work, and sometimes he's having strange ideas. But basically, he can do it. Most of the elderly will say, no, oh, I don't want to use it, it's too complicated, and the world is too fast, and I cannot follow, and I cannot learn it. No, you can. Fact again is, here again, the more you use it, the better it gets. If you stop using your brain, it will fall apart. And this is what happens with many people. I've seen this a couple of times in my social network. My real biological social network, not a digital one, that people that have been super fit and super smart during their work life, on the day they retire, they say, okay, I have done this for, I don't know, 35, 40 years, and now I stop thinking, working, doing things, and they start falling apart. If you see them half a year later, they have turned from a dynamic person into a real old lazy person. So not using your brain, stop using your brain, stop doing things, will make your brain degrade, downgrade, fall apart. And this is one thing, one message you can take with you. The more you use it, the better it gets. So don't stop using your brain. Whenever you do something, wherever you are, whatever you do, that the brain downgrades in age is not a natural thing. It is because it's not used. And then the last point here is brains are sometimes hurt. Parts of the brain are sometimes destroyed. This may be from an accident, but also from strokes. Very often people have strokes. People that have strokes have problems with parts of their brain. Particularly the language is a problem, people stop talking or they don't find the right words anymore. But in many cases, not in every case, no, but in many cases, the brain repairs itself. So other parts of the brain take over the tasks of the destroyed part of the brain. It's okay. One part in the brain is destroyed and another part takes over what the destroyed part did. And this, again, will not work with a computer. If it's broken, it's broken. And that the mouse becomes some kind of screen, or that the hard drive becomes some kind of USB drive. This is not possible on a computer, but in the human brain. And here again, a computer is the way it is. If you get it out of the shop, if you buy it, there's a hardware in this and it works the way it is. Of course, you can change the hard drive, you can change the processor, you can change whatever. But basically, it is the way it is. It doesn't change by itself. The only thing is, of course, it breaks down. Rotten down. But it is not doing anything to the positive. And this is what the human brain is doing. All right. So I talked about the three reasons why the human brain is not a computer. First of all, we have the association in the brain and the emotional connotation in the human brain. So we have these change of thoughts we run through over and over again, or we wander around with the thoughts. A computer is a sheer data storage and processing machine. It's not having any of these capabilities. The human brain gets better if we use it. The more we use the brain, it's like a muscle, the better it gets. And if we don't use it, it will fall apart. Computer, the more you use it, the more problems you may get. If you don't use it, it probably remains the way it is. And the human brain is dynamic and self-repairing. So when we learn things, when we get to learn new things, we build new synapses, we build new connections between neurons. They're established and it's constantly changing. And this works through any time of your life. It starts with your birth and it stops when you stop breathing. All right. If you like this podcast, feel free to recommend this in your network. The more people listen to this podcast, the better I'm ranked. And the more people get the chance to follow me and get into this Human Technology podcast. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, beta-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.